All right. Whoa, that was loud. We'll get started. My name is Richard Azariga. I am a principal software engineer at Microsoft, and I'm joined today with...
I'm Doreen Brown. I'm a program manager on the Office Extensibility team over at Microsoft.
And today we're going to talk about a developer's guide to maximizing the cloud between Office 365 and Azure. We think there's some really unique ways that you can use the two services together. In fact, I think if you were to talk to me and Doreen, a lot of times, Office 365 is talked about as being a software as a service, and Azure is a platform as a service. I actually think they're both platform as a service. I really think of Office 365 that way and the different things that I can do with it, and this session is really meant to kind of highlight how those two can work strongly together. If you just came from a session, I'd highly encourage you guys to remember to do your evals, and after this session, do your evals. Feedback's really important. It makes this conference better so that we continue to have great speakers and great content. So highly recommend you guys fill out your evaluations and you can quite possibly win a prize. So from a objectives and takeaway standpoint, the goal of this is to expose developers to unique ways of using both Azure and Office 365 together. We want to illustrate that there are certain scenarios that with Azure and Office 365 that it would be almost impossible to deliver without combining those two services together. And then we also want to demonstrate how Azure developers, if you're already doing a lot of things in Azure, how you might be able to maximize those skills by tapping into Office 365 and the large number of subscribers that are out in across the globe that use that service. So from a takeaway standpoint, I hope that we're successful today if you walk away understanding that Azure really provides the first-class experience for delivering Office 365 extensibility. Azure and Office 365 can deliver some really powerful scenarios and even some hybrid scenarios. I know that almost any organization, regardless of how much they've invested in delivering software through the cloud, are going to also have things on premises, and we'll look at how we can work with some of that today with Azure. And then finally, I hope that everyone walks away, and I think we can achieve this, saying, I didn't know that blank could do that. I think regardless of how comprehensive knowledge you have across the two, I really think that we'll probably come up with at least something that you didn't know was a possibility. So just a little bit about the Office 365 vision. You know, we have a vision of both being able to extend a user experience and being able to get data out or work with the data that's in Office 365. And again, we think that Azure is a key part of that. So from an extending the user experience, I might have an extension that I build into Office or a mobile app that connects into different services. There's a number of different ways that we can do that. We can extend a user interface. And then obviously there's a lot of data that lives within that platform that I can go and tap into to light up different applications and do more interesting things. So just a little bit to set the ground, and when we kind of envisioned this session, we kind of thought about a few different profiles of users. So I wanted to highlight those. So the first one is what I would call the just general Office 365 developer. So this is someone that probably has more experience on the Office 365, maybe SharePoint or Exchange side of the house, than they do Azure. They might have some kind of limited experience to Azure. Maybe they've done some things with websites or databases. And maybe they're curious about how they might be able to leverage Azure to deliver more with Office 365 and maybe expand their skills to different platform services.
Yeah, quick show of hands. How many people here have an Office 365 subscription today? Right, that's
awesome.
Pretty much all of you.
Good deal.
Awesome.
The other type of person we thought that is not supposed to say Office 365 developer. That is supposed to say general developer. So one of the things that we were looking to is there's probably a lot of developers that are looking at Office 365. Maybe your organization is about to adopt it, or maybe you're just curious on how you might be able to do more with that platform. And so we want to expose some interesting things with Office 365 and how you might be able to maximize your existing knowledge of Azure to do more things, maybe be able to get into different monetization things, or maybe you have some apps you could sell or add-ins that you might be able to leverage and do more with. And maybe you recognize that the developer opportunity is big there, and that brought you to this session. And then finally, we have kind of the other. Maybe you're an architect or decision maker looking to better understand the possibilities of the cloud. Maybe you're a software vendor that has products that have a productivity focus. Or maybe you just looked on the conference schedule and saw buzzwords like Azure and Office 365.
Like, that's in the keynote. I should go to this session.
That's right. Well, if that last person is you, I have one slide to kind of help out with that. So here is a cloud and a Surface and a HoloLens cross-platform and a picture of a kitten, just to kind of get some buzzwords and exciting things out of the way. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Doreen to talk a little bit about our agenda.
Yeah, so we've laid out kind of the goals of this session and who we intend this talk to be for, but how are we going to actually wow you with all of the integration that we're doing, right? Basically, what we plan to show you today is, since most of you have Office 365 subscriptions and you are using Office 365, how can you take this tenancy, all of the information about your tenant, up or connect it to your Azure AD subscription, where you can get some more resources on how Azure AD works, and then walk through a bunch of what we personally think are really interesting features and capabilities inside of the Azure platform, and how we can connect those to Office 365 to make your Office 365 data really do some cool stuff as well. After that, I'm sure you'll have a ton of questions because we're going to blow your minds, and we'll go from there.
One thing I'd say on that, on the list of key features here, this is actually a little bit, there's a few different things that we're going to add in here. We're going to do some things with Logic Apps. But what I would say is that there's tons of different services within Office, within Azure, and we really had to kind of pick what we think hits some popular scenarios. So I think that's what you'll find is that some of these things in here we picked strategically because we hear a lot from customers. Hey, I want to be able to do this, and these services help enable that.
Yeah, and if there's something that you're interested in that we haven't covered, we'd love to hear about it and maybe hear about what scenarios that you're trying to solve. We can work it into things like dev.office.com or sessions in the future. All right, so the first thing you need to do in order to develop for either Azure Office or anything in general is to actually set up your developer environment. And when it comes to this, first you need an Office 365 subscription. You can either get this through the three free 30-day trials. You can get this through, you get a free year MSDN, with your MSDN subscription. Or you can join the developer program that we have going on down on the first floor. You get a free year of an Office 365 dev tenant if you sign up and you go through the introductory programs. Then you need to sign up for your own Windows Azure subscription. A quick show of hands, how many people here are MSDN subscribers?
Awesome.
How many people here know you can get $150 of Azure credits every month? How many people here use that to build 365 apps already? Awesome. Okay, so it's the hands are slowly going down, so this session will be useful, but that's good to know. So we'll go over that. Then you need to set your administrators so that you can actually edit the data and consent to these applications working in your tenant. And then we'll show you how to use VS 2015 to actually get an app working inside of your Office 365 tenant. All right, so with that, I'm going to switch over to my PC here. And on the screen right now, I have where you can get a free 30-day trial of Office 365. If you scroll down to the bottom here, you can actually get this free trial. But based off the show of hands and the fact that this takes a while to provision, probably about 10 minutes or so, we're just going to skip over this and proceed to the next step here. Right, so next, after that, we go to the Windows Azure subscription that I have. As we talked about earlier, you can log in to your MSDN subscriptions page and get access to Visual Studio, your free Azure credits, all of that. It sounds like most of you are aware of that, but that's great.
I'll point out one thing really quickly is if you don't have an Azure subscription and you don't have MSDN, you can go and it requires a credit card, but you can create an Azure account just to be able to go in and manage Azure Active Directory. That won't cost anything. Now, if you start provisioning other things, you'll start getting bills. But
Yep. Just
to do the Azure AD part, and we're trying to make that better. Over time, you'll be able to do more of that directly from Office 365 administration. But just for those that don't fall into those buckets of being an MSDN subscriber or someone that has an Azure account.
Yeah. I think you also get 10 free Azure websites too, so you can start provisioning and doing some trial work, but anything serious does require a credit card with actual money on it, right? So here I am in my Azure management portal, and you can see that there are many different items here that you can use to build your applications. We'll touch on a few of these today, and we'll show you where they are inside the portal, but for now, we're just going to look at this Active Directory. Every Office 365 tenancy has an Azure Active Directory associated with it, and all users and apps and information about that tenancy resides in this portal that you can take a look at. So we'll hook up a blank tenancy to this Azure subscription, but first, let's take a look at what one looks like when there's actual data inside. So here I've got my own MSDN subscription, my own tenant added to my Azure account. And you can see here I have a whole bunch of options around users and groups and apps. And what we really care about here is the list of applications associated with my tenant. And so these are all the apps that I've built. These are all the apps that I found either, you know, on somebody's website or through our Yammer groups that are really cool and that I've consented to use. Right, so I can go look at the ones that I own, so things that I've built. Right, and let's just click into one and see what it looks like. So I'm just going to take a look at this GPX viewer here. It was just a quick demo I used, but I set a bunch of stuff in it. And you can see that the app is multi-tenant, which means that I've set it up to work on basically anyone who logs into the website. If I wanted to just build a line of business app, I would just say it a single tenant. But I've also said that I want to give this application permissions to access Office 365. And in this case, I just give it access to SharePoint, right, to read and write users' files. But I can also add applications, Dynamics, Power BI, anything. And we'll touch on a few of these during our demos and how you can connect your apps and your data together to do some cool stuff. But this is how you give the apps permission to actually edit the data inside of Office. Now, let's say I have an edit my tenant. I just want to put this in here. I would go to New, App Services, Directory. Right. So I want to say, hey, I have this tenant set up. I'm going to custom create this. And because it already exists, you know, I already have my Office subscription, I'm just going to use an existing directory. It says, you need to sign out, blah, blah, blah. I'm ready to be signed out. Great. Right, and while we're at it, this is a 30-day trial, so you're not going to get much out of it if you copy my password. Right, so we'll continue. Get my password in here. Right, and so now we're saying, do you want to add this tenant to your Microsoft Azure subscription? Do you want to be able to edit and add new applications and edit your users in here? And I want to. I'm going to press continue. Right, and that's it. Super simple, super easy. If you haven't done this already, I highly recommend it just for the purposes of knowing what's going on in your tenancy. Right, so now I can sign out of my Office account and I'll log back into my Azure subscription and you'll actually see the tenant right there. Right, so I'll log right back in. It's gonna take a little while, that's fine. And when we get back to this page, we'll let that load for a little while. So now that we have the application added to a tenant, we can actually create applications through Visual Studio that we can hook into our own O365 tenancies, right? And you can do this manually in the portal. You can create a new application, set all your resource IDs, do all of that. But instead, let's use a tooling that does this all for us. So what I have here is Visual Studio 2015 release candidate. It was recently announced, I think at today's keynote, something like that. And we're gonna use this to create an app and deploy it to an Azure website. So I'm just going to say I want an ASP.NET web application. It doesn't really matter what the name is. And we'll go ahead here. And there's two important parts to the setup process that you need to really know about to be able to authenticate with Office 365 single sign-on. First, I want to authenticate using my work and school account. That's my O365 tenancy here. And I'm going to say I want this to be used by multiple organizations. So this is the multi-tenancy that I talked about earlier. dobrown.onmicrosoft.com is my own domain, and I will give this app permissions to read my directory data so it knows who is trying to sign in and that it is actually a user inside of the tenant. So we're going to let this sit. The second thing that is important is that we want to deploy this to an Azure website. So the Azure website is where our code is hosted, it's where our code lives, and it prevents us from having to set up IIS servers or Apache servers or anything. We just click a few buttons and we're done. So in this case, it just gives us a name that it knows is unique. We want this to be in the West US because we're in California. And while that's going, we'll go back to the portal here and show you that app. So there's Contoso. That was the tenancy that we just added. I can click into it and actually see all the different things here. But let's pop back over to Visual Studio. It'll take a little while to create the web app. It's adding the information to Azure AD. And you can see here, it's working a little bit on creating the Azure web app inside of the cloud. So while it's doing that, let's take a look at the Azure AD authentication configuration you need to actually get this all to work. Right, so in Visual Studio 2013, you would see this in the Add Connected Services box when you installed the Office 365 tools for Visual Studio. But in 2015, we've moved this out into its own menu. And you can go in here, we want single sign-on, we want to use our Office 365 accounts to access this app. Here is the client ID and redirect URI, and I will set that to the web application 56690.azurewebsites.net, which is where we will deploy all of this data to. And that's my client secret. Great, that's on TV. All right, so it will replace a bunch of files for us. And you can see here, we can just publish this web application to this web app, .azurewebsites.net. So that'll sit for a little while. In the meantime, let's go to Office 365 and see where this app will appear once we consent to it existing within our tenancy. So when we go to portal.office.com, it'll prompt me to log in. And what we'll see at the top is what we call the app launcher. And the app launcher is a listing of where all of my applications live inside of Office. Right? So you can see here, I've got mail and calendar and people and OneDrive and all of the apps that you're aware of today. But you'll see here, I also have like this web application. And that is an app that I've previously consented to. So if I go to my web application, I can just run this here. There's currently a bug in Visual Studio where if you publish it without doing a bunch of work, it will fail out on the redirect. So I'm going to show you just from my local machine. I will log in with my Office 365 account. And this is where it prompts me, hey, you're logging in for the first time to this application. Do you give it permission to actually access everything you do? And in this case, we want to read directory data and log in to the app itself. And I'm OK with that. So let's just accept. And it'll do its work. It'll grant the consent. The first time is a little slow. But when we get back, it'll actually show you some information. Right? So that was it. That was, what, 10 seconds, maybe, most of it me talking. We went from no code, no app, nothing hosted in the cloud, to you actually being able to authenticate and call the Office 365 APIs. And in fact, if I go to the user profile page, which is some predetermined code that the Visual Studio tooling makes for us, this will actually call the unified APIs that we announced earlier in build, and it displays the data from my tenancy as stored in Azure AD. So from here, you're pretty much good. You're set. You can switch back over. Right? So every app that you make in Azure, every app that you make that connects to Office 365 uses these core concepts. So Azure Active Directory applications, we talked about this. It's where your third-party information, your metadata is stored. When to use it? Applications that need access to multiple 365 services. You have an app that connects to your Exchange email, your SharePoint sites, your Office 365 groups, and then also standalone applications that you just want to authenticate to Office, right? Maybe you're building an app that does not even need anything in Office 365, but you don't want to implement your own authentication. You can use it for this too. The second concept we just went over to review is these Azure web apps. And this is just the service for hosting all the data in the cloud that we talked about. And so just you create this app, it does it all the deployment for you. Visual Studio, you can just F5 it and publish it right there. Very simple, very straightforward. So I'm going to pass this off. You should show some cool stuff building on top of all of this.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to need some audience participation. We're going to do a pretty elaborate demo that's going to use a number of different Azure services. So in just a moment, I'm going to put up a QR code and a web URL. Maybe some of you already saw it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up my phone here. So this is just a really simple mobile website. And what it's going to do, it's going to read your user agent. And it's going to decipher what device and browser you use. It also wants your location. We're going to actually see what type of device is the most accurate with GPS indoors, just for fun. But we're going to do some really cool SharePoint things with this. So I'll go ahead and submit mine here. And it should give me a little prompt that says, thank you for submitting. And so now I'll go back to the PowerPoint slides really quickly and let you guys do the same. So if you just go to bit.ly/O365build or
look at
scan,
this QR code
scan
here.
The code here, you can do this alongside of me. So what we're going to do is go through a number of different scenarios that I hear are really popular with customers are asking for. Hey, we're moving to the cloud. We need to do a number of different things. And so we're going to go through a couple of different services and see how that might dovetail into a solution that you might want to deliver within your organization. So hopefully everyone's had a chance to see this. I'm going to move on. So the first thing we're going to look is Azure Storage Queues. Now, Azure has a number of different ways that I can queue data. So the scenario here is the data that you're submitting through that website, I actually need to do a lot of processing on it behind the scenes. I don't want you to have to sit and wait for that. So what I did is when you went and submitted your form, I basically just threw the data on a queue and let it keep going, right? So we're basically queuing up data. There's a number of scenarios in Office 365 that are great for queues. A really good one is in things like SharePoint Online, provisioning a site. I might want to submit a configuration of the type of site I want, maybe the template, some different options, and then kind of move on. And then once it's done, maybe it sends me an email. So that's the type of thing we're doing here. So we're going to look at an Azure Storage Queue, which uses the Azure Blob Storage. There's other things like Service Bus Queues. There's things like Event Hubs that we can use queuing type of mechanisms with. This one is a little bit more specific in that really the idea is to be able to drop off messages and have a consumer receive those. We're going to really use this for things where I might want some sort of worker role behind the scenes. We can do some really interesting hybrid scenarios here. I can have something on premises listen on this queue and be able to do processing. So it starts doing some really interesting ways that I could communicate through a firewall by, in a sense, polling for things in that queue. There's also, this one isn't going to guarantee order, so the Azure Storage Queues don't have like a FIFO type of model. If you wanted something like that, there are things like Service Bus Queues you could use. But I picked the Storage Queue for a very specific reason, in that what we're going to go into next is something called a web job. A web job can actually be triggered off of this queue. So as soon as something hits the queue, my web job can pick it up and move on. So there's a lot of great examples for this, but let me really quickly jump into code and show you how easy it is to write to a queue. So I'm going to go into Visual Studio here, and I have this attendee controller. This is what you submitted your data to just now. It was basically a web API endpoint. And what I do is I'm going to establish a connection to my cloud storage account. And so the first thing I did when I set up this project is I added a NuGet package for Azure Blob Storage. So if I were to go into this project here, which is my web project, and look at my NuGet packages, and I'm going to put this entire solution out on GitHub so you guys can pull it down and take a look at it. But if we look at the installed solutions, one of the things that you'll find in here, maybe there's a lot of things. There it is. At the very bottom is Azure Windows Azure Storage. So that's going to allow me to write to a queue or do anything with blob-type storage. So I'm getting a client that I'm going to work with. I'm basically establishing a connection to the queue. And then I'm basically saying, create it if it doesn't already exist. So it's just to validate that that queue is present. And then what I'm going to do is go out here and just stick that data. I'm going to serialize it as JSON into the queue. So let's see how many we've collected here. I'll refresh. This is just Azure Storage Explorer. It's a free tool you can download. And let's see, do a little refresh and see how many items. So I have quite a few here that have queued up. I have nothing processing this right now, and that's what we need to do next, is we need to process all of these messages. So that was storage queues. The way we're going to process our messages is with a web job. This is one of my favorite features within Windows Azure. So Azure's always had the concept of roles, like worker roles, but a role typically has a lot of overhead. It's not cheap. Web jobs are just a component of an Azure web app, an Azure website. And so, as Doreen said, most users get 10 free Azure websites. Well, guess what? You get 10 free web jobs. So you can use these web jobs, and it's so easy to use. It's basically just a console application that you zip up and you go place out in Azure. So these are great for background processing. Anytime that you need to do scheduled processing, continuous processing, or any sort of trigger-based processing, and we'll take a look at this. So there's a lot of great examples. If you've ever followed what we're doing around our Office 365 patterns and practices, there's some really great patterns that they've developed around leveraging some of these web jobs for things like timer jobs in SharePoint. Or maybe you need to do some sort of other background processing in another service like Exchange. I had an executive assistant come to me the other day and say, hey, every time we do one of these conferences, I have to go send hundreds of emails out to different partners from the executive, and it needs to be from their inbox. And I was like, well, that's a great kind of background process that we could do with Office 365. So let's take a look at our web job and how we're going to process that automatically off of our queue. Actually, I'm 8, right?
Yep.
I am 8. All right, so you notice that in my Solution Explorer, I have a bunch of different projects, but you can see I have this web job project, and it is literally just a console app project. There's nothing special about this. It's just a normal console application. So I'll go ahead and go into my console application. So here you can see the typical main that kind of kicks things off. And one of the things that I added in here is there's a NuGet package for web jobs. So the first thing that I did was come out here and say, I want to add that web jobs NuGet package so that I can work with web jobs easily. And one of the things it gives me is this web job host, where what I'm saying is I want to run continuously. So this is going to basically, when I go and upload this into Azure, this console application is going to stay running forever. And one of the things that it also gives me is the ability for me to mark something as using a queue trigger. So if you look here, I have this thing called process attendee, and the very first thing that I'm saying in here is I want to trigger this off of something getting added to the queue, and I just put in here the queue name. So if we were to go back to Azure Storage Explorer, you can see that the name of my queue is attendee queue. So what this is saying is when we go and put this out here, it's going to listen on this attendee queue, and anytime a message comes out, we're going to call this method here. So really simple. The cool thing is when I'm ready to actually deploy this to Azure, all I have to do is come out to the folder where it's at, grab either the release or the debug. I'll just add debug here. I'm going to send it to a zip file. So you can see there, basically, I just created a zip file of my entire project, and I'm going to go and upload that into Windows Azure. So if I were to come out here to my Azure account, here's my website. You can see that it's under the website area of the portal. And if you go into a website, there is this tab for web jobs. And that's really what we're concentrating on here, is the web job component of this. And I can simply come out here and upload that zip file. And then I have a choice on what I want to do. Do I want to run it continuously? Do I want to run it on demand? Or do I want to run it on a schedule? It actually provides a scheduler. So you can actually come in here. If you were building like a timer job in SharePoint, you could say, I want to run every night at 2 a.m. And it gives you that ability. So really cool concept here that's free with these web jobs. And it's really cool when combined with a storage queue. So I'm not quite ready to upload this because there's another really popular scenario that I want to fit into this. And that is, once I start adopting all of these cloud services, what if I still need to work with some data that runs on-premises, some legacy data? How does Office 365 reach into on-premises, something that might be behind a firewall, and be able to work with that data? And there's another service that we're going to look at that's going to make that possible. So we're going to look at something called a Azure Service Bus Relay. I'm curious, out of curiosity, who here has worked with remote events with SharePoint? Remote events. A couple people.
A few of you, yeah.
So if you've ever done remote events, one of the things you have to set up is you have to go configure a service bus connection string. And what that is not to go too deep, but a remote event basically calls a website, or I'm sorry, a WCF service. And in order for Office 365 to call your local host machine, it basically sets up a connection through the service bus. So what this is, a service bus relay is a bi-directional communication mechanism where you have two points that are listening on the bus. And they can both write messages to the bus and read messages off of it. And it can be done synchronously. So I can go and I could call basically a service on premises behind a firewall from within the cloud. So this is a great scenario if I have legacy services that I want to securely connect into, or if I have certain like NAT considerations for some on-premises data. There's really great scenarios that we can enable here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a quick service that's going to run locally here. And I'm behind all kinds of firewalls. I'm behind, I don't have a static IP. And Azure's still going to be able to call my local machine because of that service bus. So we'll take a look at this here. So going back to my solution, I have a couple of things I want to point out. One is I have this thing called legacy service. And this is just basically it's my mock-up of what like some legacy service that you might have is. The key for you to do this service bus is you do need to wrap whatever service you have behind a WCF endpoint. That could simply call another service once you do it, but ultimately that's how you configure this. So in my legacy service, you can see I have this thing called a geo service. What this geo service is going to do, it's going to calculate the distance between your device's latitude and longitude and what I know the latitude and longitude is of this room. So we're going to be able to see how accurate your device was indoors based upon the data that you submitted here. That's all it does, right? This could do anything. It could be going out and calling SAP maybe or some other, you know, line of business application that you have on premises. Service bus is a great example how you might be able to leverage that. The one key thing is that both this legacy service and our web job are going to have in common is they're going to have a contract that they share, and that's that WCF contract. And it's simply just an interface. If I go out here, here's our interface called Get Distance, and it just defines what the parameters are so they both know the right way to talk to each other. So this is defined both in the service here. You can see it implements that iGeo service. And then it's also implemented in my web job so that it knows the right message and how that's going to communicate between each other. So this legacy app, it basically is just a little console application where I'm going to set up my endpoint to the service bus and just say host.open. That basically says I want to start listening on the service bus. And I'm going to actually do the exact same thing on the other end where I want to go and call into that service bus. If I go back to my web job, so again, what you're looking at here is behind the firewall. This is my legacy on-premises service that's going to listen for things talking to it. Over on my web job, I have, you can see the very first thing I'm doing in process attendee is go and get the distance. We're going to pass in that attendee and get the distance. And if we look at what that get distance is doing, it's again setting up a endpoint into the service bus. I'm setting my connection information to that. And then I'm just calling the service. So I'm saying channel.getDistance. And that's going to call that synchronously. So I'm going to call an on-premises service synchronously with this data. So I think we're about ready to actually start processing some data through this application. And so let me go and let's upload it. Let's give it a shot, see if it works. Actually, the first thing I'm going to do is start my on-premises service. So let me go over here. And all I did was just build it. So if I just did I'll do a rebuild here. And I just went to the bin folder, and we'll start it. It's a console application, and here it goes. And it'll tell me, okay, it's listening now. So it's basically waiting for people to call it. And that's the endpoint. That SB is the service bus prefix that we have to that endpoint. And so we're listening on this service bus right now. They share a secure key. So this is a very secure way of doing things. It's like think of it as like an application secret that we're going to be able to work on this with. Now, before I upload my web job, you might say, where's Office 365 in all this? You've been doing some kind of cool things in Azure, but I really haven't seen anything on the Office 365 side. Well, once I get my distance back, what I want to do is shove all that data into a SharePoint list. And that brings up some pretty cool things that we haven't really disclosed yet. So you may be hearing, hopefully this will be something that you're hearing for the first time. We, as of this week, now support making an app-only call into the Office 365 APIs. Up until now, it's always, I had to operate as a user. Everything had to be in the context of a user. But now, if I were to go out to where I've defined my application, so I have this little thing that's called the SP app-only app, you can see that I can specify application-only permissions. So this was not an option until this week for SharePoint Online. We could do it with Exchange, but not SharePoint Online. What's cool is, if you've worked with SharePoint in the past, you knew that SharePoint, you could do an app-only call with ACS. This is way more secure, in my opinion, because it's actually going to make the communication with a certificate. So what I do is, once I specify this, I actually have to download my manifest, and this is an example of an Azure manifest, and what you'll see is, I actually have to go put in a Base64 encoded certificate, right? This is actually the public key of a certificate that I'm putting out inside of Azure. There's some great documentation on how to do this, but ultimately, my web job now, without having to do anything with AppRegNew inside of SharePoint, is going to be able to talk into SharePoint to add list items. So this does a couple of really powerful things. You as anonymous users are writing to my SharePoint site right now. And you're doing it through an Azure AD secured application, which I think is a pretty cool thing. The other thing that you may not have known, this maybe you walk away saying, I didn't know it had that. SharePoint actually has a geo column. I don't know if you guys knew that, but you know, when you create columns in a SharePoint list, you can create single line of text, dates, all different things. It's actually a geo column, but it's hidden. And so what I did is I went and created a geo column through PowerShell in SharePoint Online. And the reason we have it hidden is you have to specify a Bing key So I'll just show you here that you can go copy this down really quick and you could use mine probably, but I just did a really quick thing that says go register that Bing Maps key as a property on my website and then go and add a geo column field to my list. Pretty simple. I'll post this on a blog, but we've collected all this data from you. We've augmented it by calling an on-premises service. Now we're going to go stick that into SharePoint that has a nice geo column to store all this.
And so because you're an Azure AD, you could maybe send an email out via Exchange or post something to a group or something else, right? You no longer have to worry about being in one particular workload, which is kind of cool.
So one thing I will show you here really quickly is let me go back to my timer job. We looked at where I was calling get distance. Let's go where, because the other option, right after I get my distance, you'll see the second thing is add to SharePoint. And let me just show you, there's only a slight difference in how I work with this using these certificates than a normal user. A normal user would go through an OAuth flow where I redirect them to log in, and it comes back with a code, I go and get an access token. Obviously, there's no user here. It's a service. And so it's going to be a little bit different. So if we go down here to add to SharePoint, I'm going to do some typical things like get an authentication context. But the very next thing I need to do is go get the private key of that certificate. So Azure knows about my public key. My web job that's actually going to go make the call knows about the private key, and that's what's going to allow them to make this happy handshake to do things. So you can see what I'm doing is I'm basically getting the bytes of the certificate, and then I'm creating a X509 certificate that I'm going to pass in to get an access token. So you can see here I get this thing called a client assertion certificate, and then when I get my access token, which is right here, acquire access token, I'm passing my SharePoint site and that certificate information. So this is probably you, if you've kind of played around inside of, this is ADAL that's providing this, that Azure Active Directory Authentication Libraries. If you've messed around with the authentication context before, you may have seen this overload on the acquire access token, and this is where it comes into play. When I'm calling into these APIs without a user, I provide that certificate. After that, it's just normal SharePoint. So if you look down here, I'm basically putting the token on my header, and I'm making posting the data just using normal REST and NoData. So I'm just doing a post to my list. Just to show you there's no smoke and mirrors here, I'll go to my list, and if I go to attendees, I have nothing. And big deep breath, let's see if this works. So we'll go out to my job, and I'm going to call this a specific thing because I want to look at it in the logs. So we'll go ahead and add that. I'm going to upload that zip file. That's all I'm doing is uploading the zip file. And I'm going to specify it to run continuously. So I'll go ahead and say, okay. So this is going to go and initialize. It's going to upload and initialize. The cool thing about this is it has the concept of logging as well, these web jobs. You can go see the console. So you can do console.writeline throughout, and you can see exactly what happened. So it's been a while since I've updated this, but let me go ahead and refresh this. And it's maybe been so long. Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, to re-log in.
There we go. So it's running, or it's actually stopped right now. Let's toggle the output. Actually, it may already be done. It happens really quick. Let's go and refresh our attendees. Nope, not yet.
We do have attendees. They are sitting in front of us.
Let's see if they're in my queue. They are out of my queue. So they should be in the attendees list. Let me try one other place. Nope. Well, let me look and see if I have an error. Getting app-only access token. So it calculated
distance. We're calculating the distance, yeah.
So I think maybe I overpowered this by doing it all at once. You really should have this running, so it's doing a little bit at a time. I'm just going to refresh this and send one through.
really quickly. There we go. I'll go ahead and say submit. There it goes, it's submitted. Let's go back here, we'll look at it on the queue. There's a few, I see a few of you guys are
Thank you guys.
Doing this with me. And queue's filling up, come on. Come on, job, be nice.
Yeah, what's up? That's a good question. Is the attendee queue case sensitive? Because you have a lowercase queue.
Where I had it, it's not. Some places it is. So there we go. We have some attendees here.
Nice.
It's weird. Some of them have no user agent string. I don't know if you guys are blocking it or doing something weird that's in there. So we have a few iPhones. We have an Android device in here. So you see how it processed these in here. I'm not sure what happened the first time. That was kind of weird. But and this will continue to go process items through as we get more and more. But ultimately, we it basically kind of processed as we might expect here. So we have a number of different distances, too. I noticed that the ones that didn't have a user agent string, have kind of a weird distance. If I go into one of these, here's that geo column, so it actually, that's pretty cool. That's something that's out of the box in SharePoint Online that you may not have known, these geo columns. It'll show you exactly where it is from a lat-long standpoint. So pretty cool from that. So there's one other thing that's kind of neat that I have going on here that I haven't talked about, and that is I have a logic app. I have a logic app that's listening for items being added to this SharePoint list, and I want to do a workflow on it. And specifically, as they get added, I want to actually maybe post a message into Yammer. And that's just one that I picked. But ultimately, there's all these great little connectors that you can use in logic apps inside of Azure. And so that's the next thing that I want to talk about.
Yeah, what's great about these logic apps, too, is that although we're showing you posting this to Yammer, you can actually create your own logic app connectors to hook into your own custom processes. So don't limit yourself to just what's available in the store today. You can build your own to hook into your own custom workflows.
Absolutely. So this is a fully managed platform as a service to automate some sort of business process or any place you might have some sort of tricky integration that goes from maybe one system to another. It's really keen for workflow type of scenarios, right? I know that SharePoint has a concept of workflow, but this is kind of at a higher level. If I want a workflow across a number of different systems, there's a great way of building these and orchestrating them within these logic apps. So in this case, the example I'm doing is basically a social posting manager. I might want to put something in here, and maybe I want to post it to multiple different social channels, or maybe I want to do some sort of provisioning through this that basically touches a number of different things. The cool thing is these logic apps, as long as you're using one of the connectors that's already available, they're codeless. I don't have to deal with any sort of code. So let's take a look really quickly at building a logic app that might connect into Office 365. So I've already created one ahead of time, and this is and we can actually see that it's been working. So here in a second, I'll go to Yammer. Actually, I'll just go ahead and do that. We'll go to Yammer here really fast. Here's Yammer, and you can see I have all of these postings that was made through my logic app. And if you zoom in on these, you can see what it's done. It says, an attendee just registered using Windows and IE browser. Here's one that used Chrome. Here's an Android that used a Chrome browser. And you can see it was created from a logic app. So this is real. There's no smoke and mirrors here. It was 1 minute ago that this occurred. And as you guys add more, they'll keep posting here. It is incredibly easy to get started with these logic apps. So let's go and create one maybe from scratch. And so I'm here in the Azure portal, and if you go under new, they're under web and mobile, kind of a weird place for them to show up. But if I go under web and mobile, what you'll see is I have this option to create a logic app.
And we'll just call this demo logic app. And then I can say create. So this will take a moment to go and provision. Now, logic apps can be kicked off manually. They're a lot like web jobs in that I can manually kick those off, or I can kick them off based on some sort of trigger. So the first step when I create this logic app is to determine that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to specify that I want it to use a trigger. Now, if I select trigger, it's going to ask me, what do you want to trigger this logic app? And the cool thing is I can go and pick a connector that has the concept of a trigger, which is what I'm going to be able to do here with SharePoint Online. So this will, it takes a moment for these things to provision. Looks like this is almost done. And actually, while we're waiting,
You might as well just show the other one.
Okay.
While you're at it, because they do take a few minutes.
Yep. Actually, there it is. It's done.
Hooray.
Okay. So here's our logic app, and you can see there's a little getting started wizard that kind of talks about like what steps you need to do. But the first step is really to set up the trigger. So you can see here's the trigger or action, and this will bring out the landscape of what I can do. Now I've pre-set up some connectors. You can see them over here on the side. I've set up SharePoint Online, and I've set up Yammer. But let's say that I hadn't set those up, just to kind of show you what that process is. I can go visit the marketplace, and there are hundreds of connectors already there. And as Doreen said, you can make your own connector. So you can see there's Twitter connectors, Dropbox, SharePoint server, so on-premises SharePoint. I can do Office 365, which is really Exchange if you read the details of it. If I wanted to send email or read calendar or do different things like that, it's in here. And you can search for different things. So I'll search for SharePoint Online. And here is that SharePoint Online connector. And you can see, if you read the details of it, it tells you, you know, I can trigger this based on a document being added, new items being added, things being updated. There's a lot of different things that I can trigger based upon. And ultimately, what I do is I give it the site and the list that I want to listen on, and it just happens for me. So if we go back to our app, let's go ahead and pick maybe a predetermined connector that I already have. So we'll go ahead and come in here, and I'll select the SharePoint Online connector. You can see it's connecting to the app. It will ask me to authenticate to SharePoint Online. I've already configured the URL of my SharePoint Online site, but it's going to say you need to authorize it. And so I'll go ahead and launch this dialog and log in. It will access it as you, or whatever user you specify here. Oh, wrong password. There we go. Now it's going to go and say, how do you want this to trigger? And so I'm going to say when people add new items in that attendees list, I can specify a frequency. So I will warn you that depending on your licensing tier, you can't possibly do these every second. So if you see if I select second, it's going to say, nuh-uh, not with your licensing. I can do, I think, to the minute. That's as often as I can do it. So every minute I can go out there. I can specify, one of the cool things it can do is move it from the list to an archive so I know that it's processed it, which is what I implemented. So I actually have an archive list that it moved all of these to. And I can even specify a view if I only want specific columns. So if I say OK here, what we'll see is it shows me all the columns in that list. These are outputs now that I can use in another step. So it's very easy to configure these in another step. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and maybe save this. And then what I can do is come in, and this is a little bit kludgy, I think they'll fix it, but in order for me to add additional steps, I have to come back into it. So I now have my trigger, but I want it to communicate with Yammer. So I'll go ahead and add Yammer to this, and that will be that next step. And so I'll go and authorize into Yammer, and what it'll do is it'll say, what do you want to do, post a message? But the cool thing is, in my message, I can use all of the data from the list item that was created in SharePoint. So I could say, a new message from, and maybe I want to pick the device. So I can just come out here and say, input the device. And it puts kind of a syntax in here that the app uses. That's it. These things are incredibly easy to build and very powerful within here. So just to, you've already seen the output of these, is you've seen kind of them posting into Yammer. Let me show you that they've actually moved them from this list. So if I were to refresh my list here, there's some more that have been added. I think it kind of caught up finally. But also, I have things in my archive. So things are getting moved to that archive constantly. So pretty cool stuff. I wanted to end with one last thing just for fun. We collected all this data. Another really powerful thing about Azure Active Directory and what we call common consent is that I can connect into other services that aren't a part of Office 365. I can authenticate once, maybe connect into SharePoint, maybe Exchange, maybe OneNote, but there's other things. One of those that's really cool that we have is things like Dynamic CRM, but I'm gonna actually play with Power BI. I'm gonna send all of this data now, I'm gonna go read it out of a SharePoint list, and I'm gonna send it into Power BI so that I can analyze it. And I just created another little console app to do that here. You can see it's doing normal things. It's getting setting my headers to read out a SharePoint. Then it's going and building a Power BI table, getting the data and basically sticking it into Power BI. So here's my Power BI, and I'll just refresh my page. And I'll show you how incredibly fast this actually operates. So you can see my data sets here on the side. I'm going to go ahead and press play. And you can see it's already created my build attendees data set. And now I could come in here and play with this, and we could do things like, let's look at maybe device and distance. It'll take a second for it to, come on, distance.
There you go.
And we can see which one is the most, it looks like Chrome is not the most accurate.
No.
So what you're seeing on the side there is distance. Looks like IE, Other, and Safari do better than Chrome. With it. And then those blanks, I'm not sure what was up with the blanks, but pretty cool how I can bring this full circle and I can start connecting into many other services.
Great. So, go back here. That's Office. That's Azure, right? Wasn't that cool how you could take all of your Azure from Office and without any real, like in an hour, literally, we actually went from beginning to end in data in SharePoint, data in Power BI. So what we want you to do is actually take the knowledge you've learned in this session and go build your own apps. Go tell us about these apps. Go post on the Office 365 Yammer group or tweet at us or do whatever it is you want. Some helpful links to help get you started. dev.office.com is the number one resource for learning how to build apps using the Office 365 platform. Right, so we have getting started experiences, links to sign up for our developer program, which again will give you a whole bunch of free stuff to help you get started here. In addition, the Azure documentation and azure.microsoft.com, if you have any questions about the Azure-specific portions of this presentation, that's also a great place to start. In addition, there's several sessions that are related to a lot of the things we touched on today, and they'll go into much further detail than what we had time to do. So in particular, like the Logic App session will go into a very deep dive about how this all works, integrating web apps with Office 365. That was earlier this afternoon, but the recording is available. If you have some issues debugging your demos like we did, cloud authentication troubleshooting will be helpful for you. Just all of the sessions will be useful, but these are some that we've especially picked out. I mentioned this earlier in the presentation, but we are launching the Office 365 Developer Program with this Build Conference. And if you go down to the first floor of the center, you'll see a whole bunch of us there with these blue booklets. And what happens is there are several different things, probably takes you about an hour tops. And if you complete all of them, we'll give you some resources on web development, some free Office t-shirts. We're happy to answer questions or get any concerns that you have. But if you go to, even after the conference, if you decide that you want to do this, dev.office.com/devprogram is where you can get started really developing for Office 365. So yeah, while you're at Build, collect your stickers to join the dev program and get a whole bunch of free dev.office.com swag. Check out the Express Talks down on the first floor. I think we may have a few more tomorrow, but the schedule is down on the first floor by all of our booths. And finally, sign up for the dev program, build some cool apps, let us know what you think, and go make some cool stuff.
And do your evals.
Do your evals. That's also important. All right. Thanks, everyone.